Hey everybody, it's John. Just a reminder to go check out patreon.com/stealthisbeer. The show is brought to you by you. And so every time you send us a couple of bucks, we're able to buy some beer for our guests and send them out and bring some cool people in. So thanks for all of your support over the last 6 years of this show. We couldn't have done it without you, and we're going to keep doing it because of you. So thanks again. Again, patreon.com/stealthisbeer. And here come the cops.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday. We are stealing beer. What's up? I'm Augie Carton.
Hey, Augie Carton, I'm John Hall.
Hi, John Hall. How the hell are you?
I'm doing really well. It's a beautiful fall afternoon. We got some beers. We got a nice breeze. Yeah, there's probably a lot of things to complain about, but in this particular moment, I don't have a single one.
Now, for those of us in Jersey, that's the world John's describing, but our accomplice today is John Harris, who's out in Portland, probably not experiencing this exact same beautiful nip in the air beginning of fall day. John, how is the weather out there in Portland during hop harvest month?
Well, today it's clear as a bell and a high of 82, so it's a pretty good day. Gonna be a pretty good day here weather-wise. Nice.
Good day for drinking beers. So John, you right before we went to record, you and Hall were saying that both of you made that venture. So John sent me a text, I assume drunk one night, where he said to me, this is John Hall, John Harris. He sent me a text where he's like, hey, so a bunch of cool motherfuckers are all going to get on a plane next Tuesday to go to Falling Rock, a very important tap house in Denver, for their last night. You should come if you can. And I, of course, probably drunk, said sure. And then the next morning woke up and said, oh, there's no fucking way I can do that. But you actually did this, John Harris. So I thought, since I think Hall wants to talk about it, and since now we have somebody with another perspective of that eve, I thought I'd let you start off with, what did Falling Rock mean to you? How'd that last night go? Somebody with 30 years brewing experience, so, you know, from the top of craft movement, if not from the beginning, what made you make that journey I failed to make, but Hall made?
Yeah, well, the word came down that it was going to close. And so a few of us started chatting about trying to get there on the last day. And we realized that none of us really could make it on the last day. So we chose to go on the first day of the last week. So I was, me and Vinny Chilurzo and Natalie, we're texting quite a bit, and we all agreed that we'd meet in Denver, and a few other crazy show up with us. Tom from Monks in Philadelphia showed up, and ran into John there. It's just the Falling Rock was, if you ever went to GABF in 1988, which was my first, no, let me get it straight. 89 was my first year at GABF, and there was nothing. We're at this hotel. We want to go to Wind Coop. Where's that? Oh my gosh. So he drove us, this cabbie drove us. Yeah. Cab, right. A cab.
Drove us to, you had to use the phone to call. The
yeah, exactly. The Wind Coop. And he's like, this is a really bad neighborhood. How long are you guys going to be here? And I go, oh, probably an hour drinking some beers. And he's like, well, I'm gonna wait for you guys. And they had the cabbie wait for us. Right. In the dark days of GABF, when there was no beer bars in Denver, really, the Flying Rock appeared in 97. And my daughter was born that year, my first daughter. So I didn't make GABF that year. So I didn't make it for its first GABF experience. But anyhow, long story short, it just became this oasis in Denver of great craft beer. And met the Black Brothers, Chris and Steve, and eventually Alan came and joined them as their third brother. And they just supported craft beer for so long. And at that point I was with Full Sail, and I supported Full Sail. When I opened Ecliptic, they gave me a friggin' night during GABF. They're like, you know, you're gonna have a featured night. And I was like, just
wow,
the way that they would, you know,
that's awesome.
Based on my history, but just as my friendship with them, because I would do a lot of, I worked a lot of events in Colorado for Full Sail. So I'd go out there probably four or five times a year. So I got to know him pretty well. So no, it's for me, and I think for, it was just important to.
That's awesome.
My, I mean, I fucking, you know, my first flight, I dropped the F-bomb, sorry.
that's fine. It's a safe space. This is a safe space.
So, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to fly in COVID, and I just decided it was that important. So
yeah,
I just hit, I hit the awesome. First class upgrade just because I figured, well, I might as well be safe. It was only 60 more
and, hours. And, so I'm definitely and I'm definitely coming home wasted. So I'd like the extra room to lay down.
So it was kind of cool to wander, you know, on Falling Rock, wander down the street, get some food, wander back to Falling Rock.
That's and about, awesome.
You know, midnight or so, I said, oh, I should pack this in. Just grabbed a,
was Hall grabbed willing a lift to pack then. It in?
Was that?
Was Hall willing to pack it in? Usually he makes me stay drinking till the wee hours.
No, I left at a responsible hour.
Liar.
I left at a responsible hour. Yeah, but right. Not after I helped to do some pretty significant damage to a keg of Blind Pig.
So anyway, John, I couldn't have planned this better. But in your tale of having last night at Falling Rock, you hit four of the things I should point out to our thieves at home, because you know we have, I'm proud to say, we have people in Australia and Sweden and a lot of motherfuckers in New Jersey. I don't know how many Portland are. But if you're not from the Portland area, you may not know John. If you are, you definitely do. But your current place is Ecliptic. And before that, you've hit, well, two hotspots I know, to shoot some Full Sail. And then I've heard about McManaman's a ton. So why don't you give the people listening kind of the arc that brings you to Ecliptic? And then I'll make the world's worst query I've been waiting to make since Justin sent me notes on you. But first, tell them the important stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I homebrewed enough to be dangerous in the mid-80s and literally dangerous. And had a housemate who handed me what was then the Oregonian, or is the Oregonian, was the paper, right? So you got your news. And said, brewer wanted Hillsdale Brew Pub. And I said, yeah, right. Why are they going to hire me? She was like, oh, yeah, it's your job. I said, I love beer and all, but I never brewed before. I homebrewed to be dangerous. And she's like, just go get the job. Oh, yeah. And so I went and interviewed, and the guy said, call me back. Conrad said, call me back Tuesday. And I said, so I called him back Tuesday, and he said, just John Harris, I'm calling to see if I got the job or not. And I could tell at that moment that he hadn't really decided he was hiring. He says, yeah, you got the job. Yeah, you got the job. And so I proceeded to give notice. That pissed him off. And I was like, dude, I got to give notice. So, oh, okay.
Fine.
All right. And anyhow, long story short, I started with Ribbons. Eventually, craving a brewery that had refrigeration. I'm not joking.
I believe you.
Yeah.
No, we open fermenters, non-refrigerated. That's what the McMahon way in the beginning. But there was another ad in the paper. I said brewer wanted the Schutz Brewery, Bend, Oregon. And I had been, yeah, newspapers, right? And I'd been.
Wait, between cabs and newspapers, John, you're really.
Yeah. Did you stop in the way back phone booth and fucking put a dime in the phone?
So I found a couple dimes before, but anyhow, I'll segue quickly. But I had been working with this other guy. I'd been laid off from McMenamin's, some long story, but I got laid off and I was trying to find a job, and but I was working with another guy in Bend on a brewery, and eventually I realized that he just didn't have he didn't have what he needed to do it. You know, he didn't have the money, and he had was too stuck in his, oh, it's what he wanted and what was reality. I said, hey, I'm going to go get a job. So I called the number in Deschutes. I said, hey, I'm John Harris. I've got 2 years experience and I'm curious about the job. And, you know, got hired at the Deschutes Brewery when it first opened. Before it opened, I was the first
brewer. That's awesome.
And of course, I pissed off this guy in Bend, Dwayne, because he's like, now you got only do you not, you back out of me. You're actually going to Bend, Oregon. Like, yeah, sorry, dude. I need a job. I'm going to be on unemployment forever.
Can't and, not work.
You know, then I spent, you know, 4 years there growing that from a brew pub.
The first 4 years of Deschutes, like the actual first 4 years of Deschutes?
Yeah.
That's huge.
Well, actually, not quite 4 years, but right about 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Give or take. That's awesome. And now we're at Ecliptic after a stop at Full Sail.
Right.
So let's talk about Ecliptic. The notes told me this. I didn't know this, but because I don't want to sound too smart, but it's a reference to the sun, the Earth's pass around the sun, right? Like a oblong ellipse or something.
Yeah, it's the ecliptic plane. It's all planets but Pluto, and Pluto got demoted a few years ago, which pissed me off. But all planets except for Pluto's are on the same plane around the sun called the ecliptic plane. We're all spatially bound.
Okay.
For like, so Pluto, we had an erratic. They didn't orbit in the ecliptic. So yeah, the ecliptic plane. Yeah.
Is that not a reason for it not to be a planet? If all planets are in that plane, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I don't understand
the politics of Pluto, but that's the first plausible thing that makes it less planet.
Yeah, I guess, you know, well, Jupiter's moons are bigger than Pluto, so they're bigger than Earth, you know.
fair. So were you always a astronomy guy, or did you pick this up over years of brewing in Bend? Like, when did you decide that looking at the stars was your pastime?
Well, it kind of started when I was, I can't remember how old I was exactly, probably 9 or 10 or whatever. And my uncle down in Fresno, California, was a science teacher, and he was a big star buff. And he built his own telescopes, and we were down there one day visiting, you know, my grandparents or whatever. And my uncle Fred said, "Here, you can have this telescope." And my dad said, "Oh, we can't fit it in." And my mom looked at my dad and said, "We're going to fit that in." So somehow we squeezed this telescope and mount into my parents' station wagon. And it was in the 70s, early 80s, I was into it. And then life happened and kind of got away from it. And then around, I want to say like 2000, 2001, 2002, right in that area, I just happened upon, let me get my gentleman. Yeah, that's right. Anyhow, I traveled a bunch for Full Sail and wandered through the Portland airport. I just wandering by the newsstand and saw Sky and Telescope magazine. I was like, wow, I used to get that magazine. Hey, let's pick it up.
Wow.
So I picked it up and I was like, I forgot all about this and how much, you know. So not long story short, I dusted off my old telescope, started looking through it, and decided that this would become a hobby of mine. And I got into it pretty hardcore, and buying myself, and for my, when I turned 40, I bought myself a really nice telescope, and did that, just became part of the amateur astronomy community, and went to star parties, and we all go out and we don't drink anything until about 3 a.m. because gotta keep night vision and try to find faint galaxies and star clusters and just look at planets or whatnot. So it's just a hobby I had, and I haven't really, honestly, I haven't done it much since I opened this place, but I'm looking forward to getting back to it, you know, because
you will. Time. The only thing I don't like about your story is I have a feeling this horrible fear it's going to give John Hawley another C print press is good, because a magazine is what brought you back to your childhood joy of astronomy. But John, magazines are still bad.
Magazines are excellent. Thank you very much, by the way. But you know, it's interesting though.
We got to talk about beer one. This is my segue to beer one. We'll come back out of it. All right. So what brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation of beer, what it is, not what we thought it would be, what it's doing, not what we hoped it would do, where we would drink it and why we would drink it rather than how many stars it's worth. To facilitate that, John and I drink blind out of black glasses. John, you have it with you too. Did you pour it into a clear glass or are you in something opaque?
Me?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a rule to have an opaque glass.
It doesn't matter. No, you don't have to. It's just that's what John and I do to completely obscure any information so that we judge it fairly.
Gotcha.
You could, you know, just try to leave color out of it, although I'm pretty sure we're drinking a black beer.
Can I ask really quick though, Justin?
When I poured it, was so inky. Go ahead.
John, no, I just wanted to know if Justin sends information about the show to people beforehand.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, blind tasting, yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Anyway, this beer is so black that when I poured it into a black glass, it stuck out as black. So either it's perfectly clear and I saw the black glass through it, or it's the blackest beer I've seen in a long time. That being said, Justin, you broke the law mailing this beer to me. This beer has an old school, but, you know, kind of wide mouth pull tab that you would drop on the ground after you took it off. It doesn't do the bendy thing.
Why is that breaking the rules?
Completely illegal in New Jersey.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Completely illegal in New Jersey.
Oh my God.
Cut your feet on the beach. You know?
That's right. Exactly. Cut your feet on the beach in the 70s. That's why the whole world switched to the kind of opener we now use, Justin, the pullback.
I had no idea. I'm not that old.
So yeah, it has to stay connected to the can. Not only in New Jersey, this isn't every state, but not only in New Jersey. But the reason it came up recently was you may remember, and John, I bet you remember this, but about 8 years ago, Sly Fox tried to kick off. It wasn't them who made it. I think Paul made it, but they tried to kick off a pull tab where you pulled the entire top of the beer off and it became like a drinking can. Because that's a pull-off tab, somewhat like this, it was illegal in New Jersey. You weren't allowed to sell that can here. And Sly Fox needed the Jersey market at the time. So their great idea was completely dashed by stupid New Jersey law.
And now you can't find O'Reilly Stout anywhere.
Anyway, now let's actually talk about the beer instead of how we opened it.
Are we supposed to open it?
Yeah.
Justin, you are the worst. Yeah, John, open it up, start drinking, start thinking about it. Call and I will start talking about it, and then we will ask for your thoughts and input. Tastes like soy sauce. It's like old malt, right? But it doesn't taste like an old beer, but it's like they somehow oxidized the malt a la, certain really aged stouts and whatever we call utopias.
It's verging on that. And I get the oxidation. I'm not necessarily getting the full soy that you're talking about, but
it's not full soy, but it's definitely soy leaning malt profile.
Yeah.
Fermented malt beverage a la soy sauce.
Yeah, but there's something that isn't quite stout-ish to me. Like the body's not quite there, or
yeah, it's or if sweet.
It's like, yeah.
And my problem is, so the show before this, Thieves, we drank a Grisette and a Martzen, both of which were amazing, but both of which had very kind of dry, stony profiles. So I'm getting that on the finish of this beer. I'll be interested if John Harris does as well, because he doesn't have those two before it. I'm afraid it's just hanging on from before, from that Martzen, and I don't want to put that on this beer. John Harris, when you're drinking this, how does the finish go for you?
A second, I'm trying to get it open.
See, another reason these tops
are flashbacks to pull tabs.
Woo! I only came here to drink some beers and kick some butt. It looks like we're about out of beers.
I just dropped my glass for a second.
Take your time. Hall, where are you at?
I keep kind of just going back to the body of this, where it's a little bit more watery. It's a little bit thinner than like a full-on, full malted stout. And I kind of keep going back to like a Guinness, right? Where it looks like it should have heavy body, but it's actually more watery than anything else. It's a little bit thicker than that, but it's, I don't know.
There's a lot of hops in it, right?
That's what I was just about to say. The hops that show up on the end, the bittering hops on the end of this are herbal and maybe a little old, but certainly.
You think they were trying to do a Cascadian dark ale? The roast is patent though, right? Like,
I
agree with you on the body, but the fucking malts are black fucking malts. Maybe somebody just threw a fistful of fucking black patent into Pliny.
Maybe, but like this, if this is somebody's interpretation of an IPA, it's not old school. Yeah. It's not somebody who is comfortable around hops. I'd be surprised. I don't know. Like it's.
What if it's somebody's porter? Mm-hmm. It's not as black as I think it is. And that explains the stoniness and the maltiness, but the lack of body and the hops are just like you're saying, the guy isn't super comfortable with his hop additions.
Yes.
That makes sense. Maybe it's a porter.
I could go with a porter.
All right. Like I said, I hate seeing the beer because it does put too much information.
John Harris, the man who
John Harris
invented Deschutes Porter, and now has a pretty kick-ass one of his own in Capella Porter. So I feel uncomfortable talking about Porter around the man who is responsible for introducing most of America to the Americanized style of Porter.
What do you think of this beer, John? Have you had a chance to drink it yet?
Yeah, well, I won't talk about what it looks like because you guys want to be blind to that. But right. It does remind me a bit of a Guinness myself. But not as dry, but it's got a real roasty presence. I agree the hops are present more than I would think for this type of beer, but it's definitely finishes clean, a little thin, but the flavor's good. The roastiness is nice. I think it's a balanced beer. I'm not sure what style it is, even though that you can see the color. I don't know if it's a.
I know we don't normally talk about color, but since you have it up in front of you, I'm now curious.
What color is it?
Yeah.
It's black.
Yeah.
Okay. Like captures all light.
Yeah. It's definitely holding up to a light bulb. But
it's very black. Yeah.
It's very black. Yeah. It's definitely not.
I'm gonna go get my rocks.
Not red.
Glass.
It's not red.
Look at it.
Some of those dark rose will throw that, that red.
Yeah, John, pour it in a glass. It is fucking black.
It's really black. Yeah.
Okay.
Like it's been squid ink dyed black. All right, cool. Where am I drinking this? I don't know. It doesn't seem to have enough. The bell curve of the palate is so shallow. It doesn't seem to have enough to really food it up. So I would need it to kind of refresh somewhere in a big drinking night, right? Like it does its thing so fast and quickly. I'm so, just in and out. I think it might, be like, all right, let's drink one of these and then we'll get back to whatever else we're drinking.
You know what this beer actually makes me think of is Matt Dapkins. And like, cause he's always putting up these reviews of like, obscure beers or like strange little things. And like, he's got a fun way of talking about them, but like for whatever reason, when you all started talking about the color of this beer and, Guinness-esque and everything else, I was like, I feel like this would be like one of those beers where you're at a party and Dapkin shows up and is like, hey, try this. And then just like watches you from 10 feet away as you're taking sips and try to figure it out. Like this is the beer your beer friend gives you to try to stump you.
All right, let's move it on. And then we can talk to John Harris about Ecliptic.
So this beer is from China. This is Master Gao Brewing. It is their Nanjing Black Lager.
A black lager.
They say is a small lager beer version of Master Gao's award-winning Lunar Eclipse Imperial Stout.
Oh, I see what you did there.
It's brewed with Pilsner malt, roasted barley, crystal malt, chocolate malt, coffee malt, Munich malt, and Chinook hops.
Did you trade with somebody in China for this?
No, this is actually imported from Be United.
Ah.
Of course it is.
Not sold in New Jersey, of course.
No.
I guess not. If the
pull tabs, not with the pull tab. They wouldn't.
Yeah, I've never seen the pull tab.
So they're obviously canning it over there. And
yeah.
Yeah, they're not doing that whole.
Why is that obvious?
With the pull tab, right? I mean,
it's not illegal in the U.S.
All right.
Maybe. I think it's only your state. We actually have a question about pull tabs, by the way.
Shut up.
I swear to God, I did not.
Did you buy this because somebody asked?
I did not.
Are you sure? Did you buy this before you read?
Yeah. I did not buy this before.
All right. Awesome. All right, let's move on. So now, and this is going to sound silly and like I'm mad at beer, and I'm not mad at beer. I love beer, but I think it's fun to ask a guy with your 30-year perspective on the market the question I'm about to ask you. So for those of you at home, John, are all of your beers named after some kind of
celestial
event kind of thing?
Yeah, for the most part, they have some type of astronomy tie-in. Yeah.
So
we've had a couple beers that didn't have that tie-in, but some collabs. But
so not all of them got it.
But 99.8% 8%, 9%.
So one of them is called Starburst. And totally makes sense to me per the thing. But because it's 2021, I can't rule out that you put the candy in the beer. And that made me nervous because I know who you are and where you're from. I was like, there's no fucking way this guy puts Starburst in the Starburst beer. It's just a thing. But it's 2021. I got to ask, is it the red Starburst, the tropical Starburst, or the traditional original Starburst? And get into that whole conversation. And mostly I figured that would be a fun question to ask because I wonder, with your perspective of 30 years versus mine of 10, you know, is there any true fraught danger, or is it just a fun convention these days that at this moment in time, I think I need to ask you that question. I can't just assume there isn't Starburst in there.
Wow. Yeah. That was a lot right there.
Yeah.
That
was
yeah,
a lot.
Dude, that's why people come here.
No, there's no Starburst.
No candy in the beer. Okay. That's the first question. And that's good. But
supernovas, you know, Starbursts, you know, blow ups.
Yeah. I like it. But how often, you know, has anybody untapped doesn't taste anything like Starburst quarter star?
Whatever.
No. All right. Three. Let's talk about the actual beer and what it tastes like. But it's your IPA, right?
Yeah, it's one of our IPAs. Yeah.
Right on. So let's talk about that part. And then four, I want to get back to if you think putting Starburst in beer is an abomination, no big deal, or just wonderful.
Expensive.
Especially expensive if you're Bolero and you have to pick out all the yellow ones. Anyway, go on. So anyway, let's talk about Starburst while we taste beer too.
Well, actually, I'm more curious about talking about IPA because I've had this conversation, John, with Jeff Allworth quite a bit of how this time of year out in Oregon and Washington is really the special time of year because everybody's doing their fresh hop beers, their wet hop beers, and it's not something that necessarily translates to other parts of the country, you know, because you guys are so close to you know, Yakima and so close to all of these great hop farms. You guys, a lot of brewers put out a lot of different fresh hop IPAs. One, I guess, do you get involved in, you know, trying to put out a couple this time of year? And then two, sort of from the, you know, the brewer and the beer drinker perspective, is that sort of a geographical beer drinking phenomenon that is Jeff right about that kind of thing, that it's a special time of year out in the Pacific Northwest for drinking, you know, one-off fresh hop beers?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it kind of all started when Sierra Nevada brewed the very first one. I got a chance to try it. This is sometime in the late 90s. Yeah, late 90s. No, I can't remember. It was okay. Back then, and they had brewed this beer. They had some dude flew up there in a private jet or plane and picked up these hops and took them back to Sierra Nevada, and then they made a beer. But I was able to try it. All of us were able to try it at Hop Union at that point. It was on tap in their tap room. And we were just all like, wow, this is pretty crazy. This is really friggin', you know, the hop flavor was intense and huge, and it was different. You know, it was a bit more vegetal in a good way. That proceeded a lot of breweries that got turned onto that, started brewing fresh hop beers here in Oregon and Washington. And you know, at this point we make two. I think next year we're gonna do a few more, but this year we did two. We had our Altair, which is a fresh hop pale ale. And then we did an Astro Lager, which is just a lager beer, you know, between a Pils and a Helles, kind of just a straight ahead lager beer that we brewed with fresh Tetnang and Hallertau. So it's very traditionally very traditional in the sense of just a lager, you know. So we do two. A lot of breweries do more than two. Kind of takes over. I mean, right now at the local grocery chain New Seasons, they have 40 different cans of fresh hot beer right
now. Wow.
So it's kind of, in reality, I kind of liken it to This is like a true harvest festival. This is our Oktoberfest, really, for us.
Okay.
I mean, if you do it in America, I mean, I know there's brewers and they're growing hops in Colorado just for fresh hop beer. But I know these hops get flown all over the country now to breweries all across the country to make fresh hop beers. But it's like for us, it's really like, okay, we really want to, you know, celebrate the wedding of Ludwig and Teresa or whatever at Oktoberfest, or do you want to celebrate the hop harvest and the fact that, especially now with so many varieties of hops and where the styles have gone with where, you know, hop flavor means more than bitterness nowadays. It's just natural for us to celebrate that by using these fresh hops and whether they be fresh wet, fresh dry, fresh, you know, like just made, you know, just out right out of the ground a few days ago, you know. It's pretty cool.
Do you have a sense of, like, after that first Sierra Nevada beer and you're all trying it at Hop Union, was it the next year that brewers started trying to replicate this and trying to put their own stamp on it, or did it take a couple of years for it to take off? And was it brewer driven, or was there customers asking for this in those early days?
No, it was totally brewer driven in the early days. You know, it's just like, you know, the first time we did one at Full Sail, we did it in Portland, our small brewery that I ran there. And we just basically filled the mash tun up with, filled it full fresh hops and just passed the wort over the fresh hops and let that just steep. And
did you get to take the private jet?
No, didn't have a jet, Full Sail.
Okay. That's just a
Ken. I don't know if Sierra Nevada has a private jet, but I know they basically flew some, you know, right down to Chico that first year. But then awesome. Sierra Nevada was the first year. Let's be honest, Sierra Nevada is the grandfather of all of us. I mean,
that's right.
Half the world uses their yeast. myself. No, I mean, how do you stay relevant as a brewery? Give your yeast away.
Yeah. You know,
hey, that Sierra Nevada tastes an awful lot like Full Sail, or not Full Sail, Full Sail, or Ecliptic or whatever. So
they stole that yeast from New Jersey. So.
Oh, they did?
We're allowed to take it. But yeah, the legend I hear or know is that Chico was originally cultured from the old Ballantine IPA of the early 70s.
Gotcha.
And that was brewed here in Newark. So I like to tell people Chico is just another thing stolen from New Jersey. But anyway, I want to ask you a question.
Great.
So
you're
while we were traveling, while we were traveling, I stopped out in Seattle with the intention of making it out to Yakima, but didn't. What I did instead was hang out at I'm blanking right now.
Holy Mountain.
Where did I hang out? At Holy Mountain while Strumke Stillwater and Holy Mountain. I'm sorry, Strumke Fast Fashion and Holy Mountain did a fresh hop beer exactly the way you're talking about, which is how I've always done them, which is hops in the mash tun, move the wort to the boil kettle, move them back through the mash tun, use the false bottom as your strainer, pour through the wet hops, ferment your beer. But while I was there, they pulled out, no shit, they'd measure out 5 pounds of the wet hops at a time into a big bucket, hit it with a weed whacker, which they thought opened them up and made more of the oils and spread the petals more and, you know, made everything a little more available. I had never heard of such a thing. And they told me that last year they fooled around with a hedge trimmer, didn't have as much success with that, but thought this would be better. Obviously, it'll be a couple more weeks before I hear how it went. But have you ever heard of or thought about or suggested doing that? I always just took the hops as quick as I could, got the hot liquid over them and moved on.
Yeah, I saw a post by Cloudburst Brewery out of Seattle yesterday that,
yep. Well, this was Seattle.
They were dumping it. Yeah, they were weed whacking. And I was like, what the hell is that? So I was actually going to call Steve Brewer up and say, dude, what's this weed whacker crap? Tell me about this, you know? And it makes sense. I mean, especially if you're going to try to put those fresh hops into a bag and put them into a fermenter as a, you know, wet dry hop. A wet, yep, hop, dry hop. What is that anyway, right?
Exactly.
Dry hop or dry wet hop? I have no clue.
Slightly moist topping.
So I never heard of that. But people do that.
Okay. So you're like me. All right. So this isn't a thing that everybody out there does that never made it to the East Coast. But yeah,
I don't know,
that was
pretty interesting, though.
Holy Mountain and Cloudburst are neighbors and friends, so it's possible this is something they came up with together. It's possible it's a Seattle thing. Like I said, I found it interesting, but I'd never heard of it, so I wanted some West Coast perspective. Do you still are both of yours call it mash tun knockout hopped, or are do you do one because you have the ability being out there to put it as a dry hop like you were just talking about for your fresh hop beers? Is one post fermentation and one pre, or are they both the same style?
Well, see, the Astro lager, we got fresh cones and basically put them in huge bags and put them into our whirlpool tank.
Okay.
Steep. Our main fresh hop Altair actually uses fresh pellets right from Roy Farms, and they came out of the ground 2 days before we use them. And Roy Farms is unique because they don't bale their hops at all. They go right into pellet, right from the kiln, right into the pelletizer. So that beer uses, this year used fresh Strata and fresh Centennial that, you know, we got, you know, 2 days after they were picked, they were in our fermenter dry hopping our beer.
How were they?
They're great.
That was the other fun thing. That beer I was talking about, the hop they chose was Comet. And I like Comet, but I don't love Comet. I've only played with it pelletized and fresh in that room straight off the binds, because you can do that out on the West Coast. It was so lemony and so sweet. And I was like, this is Comet? I just kept saying that all day. I was like, this is what Comet smells like on the vine? So I was pretty – that made me think twice about wet hopping.
Yeah. So just – I mean, yeah, so we utilize – it just depends on our beer, whether it's, you know, wet hopped or fresh – we call it fresh hop, so it, right. It's true. It's made with fresh hops. So, it's hard to. After I saw the weed whacker thing, I was kind of like, you could take 20 pounds of wet hops and turn them into the same space that's, you know, takes up probably 5 pounds. Of, you know, you could probably get a lot more in that bag in your tank than you could. Mm. They weren't macerated.
Well, I can tell you, since I was there, they were using a hard edge, not a whip, weed whacker. So if you're going to go out and play around with it, hard edge weed whacker.
Oh, like full on blade. Yeah.
Okay. Three blades, not a cord. Okay. All right. So let's talk about beer two, team. It tastes just like beer one.
This has a little bit more of a harsher alcohol. Like it's got like a little bit of a boozy edge on the finish of it that is, I don't know, a little bit electrifying, a little bit troubling, a little bit.
I went and got a different glass to pour into because I was afraid I'd confuse beer one and beer two. And yeah, so the only thing I would give you
is solventy kind of thing. Yeah,
there's a little bit more. I know I shouldn't talk about flavors in terms of color, but somehow there's a little bit more red to the roastiness of this one than black to the roastiness of the other one.
Okay.
But just like I thought that last one was a porter, I think this one is someone's, you know, ridiculously overdone porter.
Yeah, I mean it's got a lot of roast. I'm having a really tough time getting past that solventy note on the, you know, on the back end that, like, you know, I feel like I can put a match around this and
it might go up.
Flicker. It might flicker a little bit more.
Like a little orange zest on a cocktail. John, what do you think? How's this one hitting you?
What's interesting is that, yeah, it's, well, because I have a clear glass, right? It definitely is actually lighter than the first beer.
Okay. Lighter in color.
Yeah. Okay. But it's boozy as hell.
Right. It's really like,
I mean, it's definitely rich. It definitely has got a roast forwardness, a little caramelness, but I can't decide what style this is.
Yeah, Hall, you're not often mad at booze. No. Do you wish this booze was carrying a little more body or a little more flavor?
I think a little bit more flavor. I feel like the harshness of, and that's what it is. It's a harshness of of the booze, where I think it detracts from everything else. Like, it's like, okay, this is kind of fun roast, and you know, maybe there's a little bit of like herbal hop, and it's got some nice body going on to it, and then it's just this, you know, smack of, you know, fusel alcohol that is
okay
tough to,
yeah, I see it for sure,
past. So like, it's, I'm not mad at it, but it feels like you're kind of going along in like a really good way and then hitting a speed bump at 50.
Got it. Yeah, that's a great metaphor. All right, so I'm going to drink this one at the same tasting as the last one, just seven other beers later. It'll be the next. Okay, I need to freshen up here. Give me that porter.
Yeah, this, I don't know. This might almost be like a decision beer. Like, I might open one of these on a night where, you know, I know I'm going to be trying some heavier stuff. And this is the beer that I sip on while I try to figure out what I'm going to open next.
John, what about you?
Me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. This is definitely, I mean, I think it's definitely leaning towards the stout. It's interesting. Like the first beer, kind of similar in the sense that they very clean present. In the case of the second beer, a bit more roastiness, a bit more black malt kind of flavor, but it finishes really dry. There's not much aftertaste to the beer.
That is, yeah.
It just cuts right off, so it's really clean that way. I can see the alcohol content. It's definitely boozy.
Okay.
All right. So cool. Let's reveal and let's tie things up. What's up, Justin? Kennedy?
So this is from Blackberry Farm Brewing. This is
important part of the story.
It's a pretty straightforward imperial stout. No adjuncts, no flavorings, nothing. It's actually fermented with Kolsch yeast.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Belgian candy sugar.
That explains your fusel alcohol.
10.1% ABV.
But still, when you give dextrose to Kolsch, it fucking goes straight to alcohol. There's no stop along the way.
The result is rich and complex. That is not overfilling and weighty. Jet black in color, dark roast, deceptively light and smooth on the palate.
You should send him this Japanese lager because it is way jet blacker in color. You should be like, this is what jet black is, motherfucker.
Are you going to do a question?
Yeah.
Well, sure, yeah, sure. Let's. So I did. John Hall, you were asking much better questions this show than I was. Is there anything you felt we needed to finish up with John before we move on?
The only question is, you know, I got a press release from John's Place earlier this week that they hired a new chef. And I'm always sort of fascinated by the brew pub model because at least here in Jersey, there's not a ton of them. And the ones that have been around have been around forever and haven't like really reinvented. But I'm sort of interested in, you know, briefly, John, how you want the relationship between the kitchen and your brewery to be and what the evolution has been like since you've opened and now what it might be going to next.
Nice question, John.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I first opened, I mean, the goal was to have high quality food. I've been in enough brew pubs and overheard enough conversations where it was like, okay, you can get your beer here, then we're gonna get some food somewhere else where it's actually good, you know, or then you would also hear the one like, okay, finish your beer up because I want a cocktail and we got to go over to this other place so I can get a cocktail. And so I determined that I don't want people leaving because of the food. I don't want people leaving because they can't get a cocktail. So it's, you know, I want everybody to drink our beer, of course, but there's people who just don't like beer and they like cocktails or like wine or like a gin and tonic or whatever they might like. So for me, it was real important when we opened that we invited a place where everybody felt comfortable and you didn't have to leave because the food was bad or that you couldn't get a cocktail. So the food beer relationship for me is really important. When I first started, if you read my business, but I really wanted to see more pairings. But what I realized is that beer can pair with so many things that you don't need to pigeonhole it in something. Now we have we call our mothership now. We have our third chef now. This guy, Kelly Weiss, and comes from a long, he's been chef for a long time here in town and worked a lot of farm to table places and stuff. So he released his first menu actually a couple days ago. Our seasonal menu and our rotate items and stuff. And lots of really, really fun stuff. And he's definitely got the chops to do it.
Cool.
Right on.
Be a good reason to come out and visit again sometime soon.
You know, and we're also in the process of opening our second location in Southeast Portland, where we'll have a whole other team over there brewing beer. And there's no room for a kitchen, so we actually have a food trailer we purchased that the chef at that place, Drew McCutcheon, will be making tasty sandwiches out of a food trailer. So it's a whole different concept, which hopefully we'll be opening within a month from now, I hope.
You took over an old brewery space, right? Was it Base Camp?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Now, tie it up with a letter, Kennedy. Impress me.
All right. We got a question. It's actually a question for Cass. Cass, you here?
Yo.
Cass is on the car phone.
I'm in a car going 85 miles an hour, and I just picked up a small keg of Rod House Builds for my brother's birthday. So
nice.
Oh, okay. Well, you're obey having a good all day. Speed limits. Put it on okay. Bluetooth.
So it's about the 360 lid.
Or right, some kilowatt lid. This question goes back to Beer One, and this is from Joe D. He says, this is a message for Brian C., though I'll take any expertise and information that the collective may have. I'm doing initial research for a beer to be packaged in the old school pool or ring tabs.
Hold on. You've got this letter and you're telling us that accidentally sent us a pool tab beer today.
Absolutely. 100%. I did not plan this in any way.
You do realize you could have taken credit for this and
this beautiful tie-in.
Been like,
well, that's why I'm reading Justin. It now. I saw it when I went in today, and I was like, "Oh, this is the perfect letter for this episode." Because I sent him a beer with the weird pull tab.
I'm just saying, you could have taken credit. You could have been like, "Yeah, guys, I thought it'd be a fun conversation starter."
Oh, okay. Anyway,
I didn't do that.
So Joe D is doing research on pull tabs.
Yeah, Joe D wants to make beer that can't be sold in New Jersey. Go on.
There's research for a package to be sold in the old school pull or ring tabs. Before I go too deep down the rabbit hole. Are there obstacles to these lids, either due to modern canning machinery or some sort of regulations?
Yes to part two, as discussed.
But what about part one, Cass? Is he still there?
Cass, will you put pull tab tops on your cans?
Yeah. All regulations made by state. The reason why it's not seen everywhere that the can comes apart in two pieces. Now it's two pieces to recycle versus one can. So it's a big recycling thing of why you don't see it. And I'm pretty sure that 360 end that Flybox is using is no longer being used, but somebody can fact check me on that.
I mean, the other part of it too is, while imperfect, the modern pull tab just kind of works. And right. Is so universal that, I mean, there is a brewery, I want to say it was in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago, called Church Key Brewing, that was doing the solid top tin lids where you needed an old school puncture opener.
You know, you get the joke, right?
No, I understand the name and the joke and everything, but it was, you know, the short-lived idea of, you know, who's got a puncture opener readily available to go at any, you know, at any given moment. And while it was like a fun little throwback, it was also like, this is an extra step that nobody wants. Yeah. So if you're canning your, it's like the aluminum screw tops as well, right? I mean, there's some breweries, Sun King out in Indiana's doing them and a few others, but like by and large, I don't know. Like,
yeah, you know, 16 ounce can by is making good liquids
and IPAs that don't explode.
I think it
was John Harris. Are you packaging anything?
Are you packaging anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. You packaging stuff?
And you canning it? Do you have any feelings that we're not saying on canning versus various types of canning versus bottles?
People don't like bottles anymore. That's what I've noticed. I mean, you see wine in cans, you see cocktails in cans now, you see, you know.
Yep.
I mean, the bottles, the bottle shelves in stores are down to one door. I mean, it's silly how fast it's changed.
What, yeah. Aren't there brewers that are doing returnable bottles in Oregon, though, these days, the 500 milliliter?
Yeah, that's dead, too. I mean, there's the Oregon Beverage Recycling Co-op has a bottle that some breweries, Double Mountain and Gigantic are using, returnable bottle. But the thing is that, I mean, we had three beers in 500 ml bottles, our porter and two sours, that we transitioned out of cans, 16 ounce cans, because the bottles just didn't sell. People have just moved away from bottles. It's really weird that if you had a, you can have the best Crohn's candy bottling line in the world and no one wants it. It's really, no, I'm not joking. It's bizarre. It's the 500 ml bottle. We're getting ready to do some barrel age releases this winter, fall winter, and probably not to can them, because that's what people want. But everybody's like, no, these belong in bottles because they're barrel aged, and so we're gonna bottle them. But
my old brew partner Jesse used the little 8 ounce can for some barrel aged stouts. It was not a bad idea.
No, those are taking off more and more these days.
Yeah.
For those wicked high ABV things, that old can is a lot of fun. I think more people should be doing that. Anyway, John, I want to thank you for jumping on with us. Kennedy, I want to thank you for picking a perfect letter to go with the beers. I'm truly impressed with your prowess as a producer. I am knocked out. Cass, you sound like shit, so I'm going to let Hall do the send us stuff.
Let somebody else do it.
Okay.
But thanks for staying on with us. I'm glad you were there to answer that two pieces of recycling question that hadn't occurred to me. Anyway,
Hold up.
Go on.
Answering the question.
Come on.
It has to do with equipment and changing the tooling on the canning line as well. It's a big investment to change over Seamer motors. That's another thing too. If you're not set up for the type of can end, you cannot do it.
Cool.
All right.
Happy hunting with this pull tab research.
I don't really know who makes these ends. I guess in China, so the beer was can.
Yeah,
that's right. All right, Kennedy or Hall, tell them how to send
Justin,
us money.
Why don't you do?
Tell
we haven't we heard from you at all,
you.
Justin.
Yeah, you can give us Patreon dollars at patreon.com/stillthisbeer. You can reach out to us at stillthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on all the social medias at stillthisbeer, and write us letters, send us money, do all that stuff.
Yeah, do all that stuff. All right, y'all. John.
Too. I'll take some money.
Yeah, send him money too. Buy beer. John, thanks for getting with us. Guys, thieves, get at us. Thanks, guys. I will talk to you all later.
Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers. John, thanks for doing